Davey Johnson on his way, and he's making a hook right now. So Sid Fernandez is going to be called in from the Mets bullpen, and Ron Darling has had it. So they pitched to Boggs in the second inning, and he burned them. He will not be burned again. And Darling is gone, 3-0 Boston.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalecki. Our next guest pitched in one of baseball's greatest forgotten games, forgotten only because the game two nights earlier was one of baseball's greatest games ever. His new book, Game 7, 1986, Failure and Triumph in the Biggest Game of My Life, is available now. It is a pleasure to say hello to former New York Met and current Emmy Award-winning baseball analyst Ron Darling. Ron, welcome to the show.
Ed, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate your time today. All right, Game 7, 1986, Mets-Red Sox, Shea Stadium in New York. Now, even before the game began, a lot of people kind of looked at it almost as an afterthought, only because of what happened two nights earlier in the Mets' epic comeback. Everybody knows, ending with Mookie Wilson hitting the ground ball that went between Bill Buckner's legs. So the lead up to the game, and especially because you had an extra night because it rained Sunday in New York, so the game was played Monday. Tell me about your thoughts leading up to the game, especially considering what happened to Game 6.
Well, I think, you know, as you mentioned, one of the most iconic games in World Series history. Mets came back from a deficit and able to win that game. And I think for most fans who are not a real, real hard, diehard Met fan, really believe that series ended on that night after Game 6. But there was one more game, and as you said, it was delayed by rain. It was Bruce Hurst against myself, and I wanted to write the book, Eddie, for a couple of reasons. One is an homage to that game, because most people don't recognize it, don't know it, and don't know who started it, relieved it, won the game, and who were the star participants. And secondly is kind of an homage. You know, I grew up in Massachusetts. I grew up a Mets Red Sox fan, and it was an homage to their team that was so good, and the Mets team that had won 108 games really just squeaked by in that series to win it. So they were as game as we were for that series, and we just got by them. But even more importantly, you know, when you're a kid, Ed, and I don't know if you went through this. I think every kid does. You know, you want to, you know, make that putt to win the U.S. Open. You want to score that goal to win the NHL championship. You want to shoot the Christian Laettner shot to win, you know, the win in the Final Four and all that stuff. But, you know, for a baseball pitcher, it's Game 7 with a chance to win the game and be showered with praise and feel great about yourself and have a great after baseball life where you can let everybody know how good you were on that night. And I was not. Now, the Mets team won, which softened the blow. But I know 2 days later after the parade, I was, you know, sitting in my apartment. I was like, you know, what went wrong? Because for most athletes, we don't think of the negative. We only can think of the positive, that everything is going to work out perfectly. And when it doesn't, some people can brush it off, and boy, I admire them. And some people, it sticks in their craw as it does mine for 30 years. I thought organically an answer would come. It never did. So I wrote a book instead.
That's amazing, thinking about how, like, a couple days after, you start to come down from, you know, Game 6, then Game 7 for you, and the parade and everything else, and you realize that, you know what, you didn't do what you expected to do. But that was your third start of the series. I mean, Game 1, you pitched incredibly well. Seven innings, only one earned run, the only run of the game. Boston wins 1-0. Game 4, you pitched seven innings, no runs, four hits, four strikeouts. Mets win 6-2. And then Game 7. So let's talk about the game itself. 3 2/3 innings, six hits, two home runs. Now, the second home run was a freaky home run because, if I remember right, it goes off of Darryl Strawberry's glove. Rich Gedman hits it. And the turning point, as a lot of people think, was when Davey Johnson brought Sid Fernandez in. Tell me, he comes out, he decides he's going to take you out of the game. Tell me about the walk from the mound back to the dugout.
Well, you know, only in professional baseball sports is a pitcher removed by a manager, the ball stripped of him, and given to someone else because he doesn't feel like he can do your job. As soon as he does that, you have that, 120-foot, 150-foot walk to the bench, which I call the ultimate walk of shame, in front of 55,000 people who who boo or do whatever they do to let you know how disgusted they were, to let fans know out there the pitcher feels as disgusted. And as you walk off, you're trying to put together what the heck happened out there, because it happens so quickly when you don't have a good start. It just feels like it gets away from you. And so my thoughts were, I'm going to be the goat of this series. This is just awful. I mean, I never envisioned this ever happening. All I can envision was 7, 8, 9 innings of excellence. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't happen, it usually at some point should leave your system, because the Mets won and there's unadulterated joy for 2 days, and you should be able to brush it off. I was never able to, for whatever reason. So that's why the book is Failures and Triumphs, instead of the other way around, because I think most athletes like to write about the great things that they've done, and I certainly had those moments, but something that sticks in your craw for 30 years, I think you've either got to sit on someone's couch for $150 an hour,
sure,
or write a book. I decided on the latter.
See, it's better to, instead of pay the $150 an hour, have somebody pay you to write the book. It just makes much more financial sense, too.
Yeah. You know, I went to Yale for a reason, I guess.
That's right. See that? He's an Ivy Leaguer for a reason, folks. You know, it's funny, too, about baseball, because, Ron, it's one of the only things, and in terms of sports, it's the only game that's truly handed down from fathers to sons. It's still spring break where I am right now, and I ended up having to take my son to work today. He's a huge Met fan. He's an aspiring broadcaster, and when he found out I was going to have you on, he was like, really, Ron, darling? So you know what? I'm going to turn it over to my son, Eddie, for the next question.
Oh, awesome.
Hi, Ron.
Awesome. Go, Eddie.
Ron, as you left the game that day, did you think that the Mets had a chance to come back, or did you feel that all of that Met magic had been used up in Game 6?
You know, Eddie, that's a great great question, because I hear a lot of times where people say, well, it didn't matter. Game 6 was so iconic that the Mets were, you know, inevitably going to win this game. Certainly, no one on the Mets bench felt like that.
Yeah.
Everyone felt like, boy, at some point we're going to have to tooth and nail kind of claw back into this game. And luckily they did. Hernandez had a big hit. Keith Hernandez had a big hit. I think in the 5th or 6th inning off Hurst, that drove in 2 to get us close. Sid Fernandez, who replaced me, only in the Mets postseason could one Hawaiian-born guy take the place of another Hawaiian-born guy, which is pretty funny. But I think that it's just interesting is that, you know, in the game that we play, you think everything is supposed to work out in the way you want it to work out. But that game just was one of those games where, you know, I did not pitch well. The team didn't automatically think they were going to come back, but they did. You know, the young Eddie, when you think about it, I was all, put in a place where I'm lucky enough in Mets history for most Mets fans to appreciate what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not naive to know that if the Mets had not come back in 86 and their only world championship was in 69, that my place would be much less secure as a New York Met.
Yeah.
So a lot of times your history gauge is instrumental in deciding who you're going to be in that fan base by one game. My game wasn't great. Most people don't even remember the game when they think about it, because they only remember Game 6. But luckily, the Mets came back.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, too, when you think about it, Ron, and you think about what Bill Buckner put up with all those years until they welcomed him back to Fenway, really only after the Red Sox had actually won a championship. If things didn't work out in Game 7, and the way you're saying, you know, that really could have been turned on you, and when they have the 86 reunions and get-togethers like they would this year, it would be completely different. The perspective would be totally different. And it's amazing how baseball is the one sport that's influenced individually more than anything else. It's amazing how somebody can take the stage in such a singular way and influence the outcome. And that's really had to go through your mind all these years as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, organically, I thought these answers would come to me much sooner and I'd be able to put it behind me, but it never did. And, You know, I think that when you look at baseball, Ed, is, you know, it's an incredible team game, but comprised of individual efforts, you know, when you think about it. And, you know, so that's why at the end of the ball game, you know, we look at it and we say, boy, team game, but so-and-so was great, or this right. person was not, or, and, you know, I think that really, if I had to admit it, I was ashamed that I did not come through when I made that walk off, that walk of shame after 3 2/3 innings, and really couldn't understand it for years and years and years. And I even sought the advice of pitchers who were friends of mine that had been successful in Game 7. And they told me things that I didn't know. And I know, I feel like I know everything in baseball. But I did not know these things. And it really made me angry. It made me feel like I went into Game 7 without all the due diligence I needed to figure it out. And I'm happy all these days later with the book to be able to put it behind me and start anew at 55.
Hey, Ron, stay with us. We're coming up on a break. More with Ron Darling just ahead. This is America Weekend, and I'm Ed Kalenge.
America Weekend.
Think green.
Harrison with you. A National Health and Nutrition Examination survey shows drinking a glass of freshly squeezed juice every morning lowers the risk of obesity, but it has to be freshly squeezed to get the actual benefit. The study found that people who drank 100% freshly squeezed juice had less fat, smaller waists, and a lower insulin resistance. This goes along with the well-known advice to eat lots of fruits and vegetables anyway, to avoid certain diseases. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
If you're an inventor who would like to attempt to have your idea or invention patented and submitted to industry, call InventHelp. They have free information for you. Call 1-800-405-9878. That's 1-800-405-9878.
Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
What if you could enjoy more free time and still get all your work done? We'll tell you how, thanks to a tip from a listener.
Ryan says he goes to a sporting event or concert just about every week. Because he's paid for the ticket in advance, he feels compelled to go.
That's his secret. It forces him to focus so he gets his work done in less time. This greater efficiency gives him more time to have fun. We've tested it, and it works for us, too.
So what's something you really enjoy doing? Get it on your schedule. Pay in advance if you can. It creates a negative incentive, a cost with no benefit if you don't go.
So you'll push harder to get your work done in less time. Enjoy more downtime for your big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.